One of the great stories is how science and the curiosity about how the world works became civilization. Science begat medicine. Science begat electronics and the power grid. Physics begat radio, broadcasting, digital signal processing. Biology begets modern agriculture. Mechanics and physics get you cars and flight. Civilization is a festival of scientific discoveries and science's applications to everyday life. It is this spirit that is captured in the 7th annual World Science Festival, which opens in New York City today and streamed around the world. Festival events bring you up close to your genes, your bosons, leptons, and fermions. You can also touch a scale replica of the comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. No, it's not named after the drummer from Pussy Riot. But even if it was, our next guests would be all over it. Brian Greene, physicist, string theorist, and professor at Columbia University, and World Science Festival co-founder. And also with me, actor, writer, and director Alan Alda. Alda wrote Dear Albert, a reading for the stage about the life and work of Albert Einstein, being performed tonight with the World Science Festival. Brian Greene, welcome to The Takeaway, or welcome back, I should say.
Thank you.
And same to you, Alan Alda. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And in this festival week here for the World Science Festival, I wanted to ask both of you, when was the first time you thought like a scientist? You did something that felt like, this must be what scientists do. Did you ever have that experience, Alan?
I did. It was when I was reading something and a ghost told me to consult a scientist. A guy had been dead 200 years, and he said, this is the way nature is made in three parts. Ask any physicist. So I asked a physicist who lived across the street because I was in my early 20s, and I was interested in spiritualism. So I was sort of believing it because it sounded interesting, you know. Well, that's good. Good to have curiosity. But I asked the physicist across the street, and he said, I never heard of anything like that. So I said, well, I know. The answer will be in Scientific American magazine. And I started reading every issue, every article in every issue. And that was the beginning for me, I think, of thinking like a scientist because – I didn't just accept things that sounded interesting. I wanted to explore the evidence behind it. And I started – I never stopped reading it for way over 50 years. I've been reading as much as I could get my hands on to try to find out what the evidence is.
Age 22. And those old issues of Scientific American are fantastic.
I mean, they are.
They really were, you know, written in that font that looked very intimidating.
And it was during that time that they said – the continents are moving apart. And I had already figured out that they fit together like chess pieces, I mean puzzle pieces. And I thought, wow, you can actually look and observe things, and then they come up with evidence to show it that it's so.
Brian, how about you? When did you first feel like you were doing something that scientists would do?
Yeah, it was definitely in high school when our physics teacher set us a problem of a baseball hanging from a ceiling by a piece of chewing gum. And we had to figure out if you let the ball swing and the bubble gum would stretch, what would be the trajectory of the baseball? And I remember sitting at home at my desk in the back room doing the calculation. I got the answer. And it was like this thrilling moment that you could do calculations on a piece of paper and figure out something about the real world. And I remember I ran down the hallway to show to my dad, and he was excited too, although, you know, baseball hanging by chewing gum, it's not exactly the most exciting of problems. But the idea that you could discern reality by doing calculations, that was a real turning point for me.
So you didn't have a ghost talking to you?
Yeah, you know, when you heard your answer, all of a sudden my answer felt so flat. I don't have any ghosts or anything, but I got to, you know, that's the truth.
Well, no, but when you retell the story, Brian, you can say, and at that moment, I was channeling Isaac Newton.
That's good. That's good.
Something like that. So but part of what the festival is about is dedicated to the idea that everyone should try and think like a scientist. Everyone isn't going to be a scientist, and everyone is going to win a Nobel Prize, but thinking like a scientist is a binding force in society in the 21st century, right, Brian?
That's one of the hopes I have for this. Yep. Brian, do you have any evidence? Do we have any exit polls or anything that indicate that a few more people are thinking like scientists?
Yeah, we do, you know, a lot of surveys after the programs, and people do say that by going to the World Science Festival, they're able to reclaim science. For many people, they got turned off from science when they were a kid, a teacher in school, or just memorizing facts, something that really turned them away from science. And then they come to a World Science Festival program, you know, many of them are hosted by John Hockenberry himself, which is a fantastic thing to experience him talking to these scientists.
Thank you very much, Brian.
And, you know, when you leave a program where the subject was science, but it made your heart race, that's an experience that changes your relationship to science. And that's a literal story. Someone wrote to us that in one of the programs, it was actually one of yours, John, that in the audience, this woman, her heart was racing because it was so exciting. And that is what we want to have happen, because that's when people realize that science is this powerful way of understanding reality.
Now, you have taken your interest in science and developed dramatic pieces. I mean, you've
Don't
got
me. Alan. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, your interest in Marie Curie. You mm-hmm. know, you tried to write a play. I mean, you wrote a play.
I did write a play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, first, you have to try it.
Yeah. Then you do it. How do you fuse this sense of entertainment, because you're trained as an actor, and this interest in science to create narratives?
I think they go together naturally. Science is a great story. It's a great detective story, and when it's told like that, you can't take your eyes off it. But it follows Aristotle's rules of drama. You have somebody who's trying to achieve something that's got a great payoff to it, if that person can achieve it, but they're facing obstacles that are almost impossible to overcome. This is Aristotle's that he figured out 2,400 years ago, and it's still true. It still makes us watch drama, makes us watch sports, and science is that. Every experiment, that's the story behind every experiment, the story behind every scientist's life, trying to achieve something that has a great payoff against obstacles. We can't wait to see how that turns out. Do they make it or don't they?
You know, there's so many regular movies that we see today that are filled with pop scientific questions and people at computers trying to figure stuff out. I don't know if either of you saw this movie Particle Fever about the discovery of the Higgs boson.
I haven't seen it yet. Have you, Brian?
I've not seen it yet, although it's actually going to be at the festival, and I heard it's great.
It's unbelievable because it is the real science. I mean, yes, there's lots of computers, there's lots of screens, but I'm telling you, when they make the discovery, I mean, no special effects, and they're announcing it in that room, I mean, you are just – the tears are pouring down your face. It is an unbelievable story, and it's all about the most advanced esoteric physics that there is.
That's one of the reasons that I've written these two theater pieces. One is about Marie Curie, and the other is about Einstein, that's going to be on tonight. And the reason is that what you just described was – a bunch of human beings, fellow people in a room, having achieved this very difficult thing. And you can identify with them as people, as fellow people. And what I'm trying to do in these plays is show you the person behind the scientist so that you can say, oh, this is somebody very much like me, only extremely smart. But they have the same human frailties and human problems that I do and people I know. And I think that is an open door to science.
Brian, what are you going to win first, a Nobel Prize or a Tony?
No. I suspect neither.
Have you? You must have gotten a couple of Emmys, no?
Yeah, you know, some of the Nova programs I've done, Peabody. But, you know, the point that you're both making, I think, is the vital one, which is for so many kids and adults, science was the stuff in a textbook, which – is just cold, hard facts that you memorize and you sort of spit back on an exam. And we've been very bad, I think, as teachers for a long time at hiding. We've been hiding the story of science. We've been hiding the misses. We've been hiding the emotional ups and downs, which is what we as scientists experience every day. Those emotional ups and downs, like Alan is saying, science comes alive. And the festival is about having programs where we inject that part of the story. We don't water down the science, but we embrace it with the human story of discovery.
I'm sorry I interrupted you for a second, but you said something that really interested me. Science leaves out the misses, and the misses are where the story is. You know, the blind alleys you go down. Oh, it looks like this is going to be promising. It winds up, the experiment shows that's not the place to look. Brian, why are those things left out? It would seem to me it would be useful for other scientists to know what the blind alleys have been in every experiment.
I think that's likely true. In fact, I know it's true. And I think most scientists have been trained for many decades that when you write your scientific paper up showing your results, you just give a clean, detached description of what you found. And I was amazed. I went back to an early paper of quantum mechanics in the 1920s, one of the most important papers. And in that paper, the authors described how part of their discovery was serendipitous. They did something wrong in the laboratory, causing a piece of equipment to explode. And then when they fixed up the equipment, it was the new version inspired by the mistake that allowed them to make the breakthrough. And they wrote about this narrative in the paper. And I'd never seen that in a scientific paper before. And I wish we still do that today.
Is that Dirac?
No, this was a paper on basically the first example of the double slit experiment.
Ah, no kidding.
It was basically done in Bell Labs. And they actually described what happened, a story.
Marie Curie's paper on radiation has that same human feeling to it. It's like storytelling. It was some part of writing about your experiments and your discoveries at that time. And it sounds like something that's been lost out of a desire for more rigor or something.
Well, one of the things I think, and we got to go here, but one of the things that is a real testimony to the chord that you've struck here is you put on the program this year for the first time, you know, you get to hang out with a bunch of these scientists in a kind of World Science University, day event where you get to go from table to table, or I don't know how exactly you have it figured out, but I mean, ask scientists questions and all this sort of thing. I looked at that and I kind of said, oh, that sounds a little, I can't imagine that's going to fly. And of course, they're all sold out.
Yeah.
Totally sold. You've had to add more.
Yeah. You know, we recognize, you know, we launched World Science U, this educational platform extension of the festival back in March. And we've had, you know, about 130,000 people have signed up to take courses in science. We have a couple pilot courses in relativity. So we realize that there is this hunger, not just for the wonder and the ideas and the inspiration of science, but people want to embrace the details and really understand it. And that's why we instituted at the festival this World Science U for a day. And it's going to be 7 hours of communing with, you know, great scientists, educators, and it sold out in 3 hours. So, we then put in a second session.
And I just want to, as a disinterested third party, I want to tell anybody listening that if they go to World Science U and watch Brian's course, they'll see something unlike any other course on the internet. It's an amazingly well-produced piece of video. It's gorgeous, and it's interactive, and he comes on live sometimes. It's great.
Thank you.
Well, guys, I will see you later at the festival. Right. And thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us both.
Alan Alder, actor, writer, and director, and one of the hosts on stage at the World Science Festival. Brian Green is physicist and string theorist, professor at Columbia University, and World Science Festival co-founder. Brian and Alan, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.